Today ought to be interesting. I hope you're ready for an interesting day. Because what we're going to go through, it just works out in the order of getting to things, but it's also very timely. In the past week, I can count three different times, I believe. Three different times that someone has mentioned to me something from Matthew 24. So it's very fitting that we are in Matthew 24 this morning. So we're going through the times the New Testament quotes the Old Testament. Specifically, we're doing the red letters this point in time, what Jesus had to say when he was on the earth. And when he quoted the Old Testament, yes. Okay, so Matthew 24, let's get our quotes first, and then we got to go put it all in context. And this is with the recent financial things going on. I have had several people who've started looking at things and thinking the end is near. And because they're thinking the end is near, then they're thinking about Matthew 24. And so we want to look at some of those things so that we know. We at least have a perception of what's going on. Matthew 24, verse 15. That's where we're going to get our first Old Testament quote. Excuse me. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Okay, all you've got are just a few words there. The abomination of desolation. Okay, now let's jump down to our next place, which is going to be over in verse 29. We're going to go 29 to 31. We'll get a few more in this. But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. Okay, now here we have the beginning of all this. And what you have is, we've got about one, two, three, about four different quotations from various places. Daniel, Isaiah, that's another Daniel one. Exodus, Deuteronomy. We got all kinds of good quotes and stuff going on. We want to see what it's all about. Put it in the context. So let's start back in 15 with the abomination of desolation. Figure out what that was in reference to. And that one, he's kind enough to tell us that it was that which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet. Okay. Daniel spoke about this one, so we can actually go back. So let's go back to Daniel chapter 9. Let me see. Let me see if I can find this real quick. Okay, Daniel chapter 9, starting from verse 24. This is going to be, part of this is going to be a little high speed. So, but Daniel 9:24 says, 70 weeks have been decreed for your people in your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, to bring an everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. It'll be built again with plaza and moat even in times of distress. Then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, And the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering, and on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Okay. Now, in this, you have one of the more exciting, more interesting prophecies about the Christ, about Jesus. And particularly, using it, you can nail down the immersion of Jesus. You could actually calculate the year of his immersion. And I know that I've gone over this before, long ago. I don't remember when. I don't remember why. But we kind of went over this. So just in the nutshell, when it's talking about the 70 weeks, that's weeks of years, 490 years. And so it starts, it says from the decree, the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, which would have been in, I believe it was 457 B.C. And then you kind of count your years from there, and you get your 69 weeks. He says 62 weeks, and then adds another seven. So 7 weeks and 62 weeks, 69 of those 70 weeks until everything's all done. So that's 69. You do your little your math, which would be what, 483 years. Do your calculation. Anyway, that takes you to 26 AD, in which case you can figure out that was when the Messiah would appear. That was the nutshell version. Yeah, in his immersion. So that's the nutshell. If you actually want me to sometime and sit down and go through the math with you, I will, because I actually like math. It's enjoyable, but I won't do that to you today. Now, verse 27, though, and this is part of the reason why we won't do this. We won't talk about the abomination of desolation. Verse 27 says, he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. Okay, so this is from Jesus' immersion, and this is that 70th week, so 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he'll put a stop to sacrifice and grain offerings. And that stop to sacrifice and grain offerings is what happened at his death and the beginning of the new covenant, 3.5 years. So that takes up half of that last week. So you only have 3.5 days left to go. Is that encouraging? We only have 3.5 days until it's all done. Less than that now, you think? I don't know. It's time, half a time. I don't know. So anyway, but you get that half week thing, and that's the whole time that the church is here. You know, from the beginning of the church up until the time that Jesus comes back, that's your 3.5 years. You can get that. You can look at Revelation. You can look at other places where it'll talk about a time, which is one times two and half a time. You're 3.5. And again, we're not focusing on that so much this morning, but I just want you to get that idea. So like when you're reading through Revelation, you're reading through different things like that, it's talking about that time period, that the whole time that the church is on earth, which is no longer physical years, but it's kind of switched into a spiritual time zone, which God only knows the timing on that. But what I want you to notice then is it says, on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even a complete destruction. Okay, so it talks about someone coming, an abomination that would make desolate. Go over to chapter 11 in Daniel. And it tells us a little bit more. You actually have that term abomination of desolation used. I've got to tell you, years and years ago in Ghana, I was going through, it was before things kind of split and all in Sinyani, and I was teaching the adult class there. And we were going through Mr. Wilson's booklet, The Second Coming. So we're going through it. At that point in time, too, we had some Methodist missionaries who were assembling with us. and they were coming to the class. And that was very interesting. But as they're coming, as they're sitting there and they're listening to all this, we get to Matthew 24 and we read the section where it says, talks about the abomination of desolation. And then it says, let the reader understand. And the guy raised his hand and said, okay, I'm reading this, but I'm not understanding it. What's the problem here? So, let the reader understand. And but he refers him back to Daniel. You know, and it's interesting. Matthew, as he's writing that, was assuming that people would have a clue about what he was talking about. Now, today, most people don't have a clue, but at that point in time, they did. Those, you know, in Matthew particularly, but Mark also says the same thing, I believe. They would have had a decent understanding of Daniel. You know, they would have been quite interested in Daniel and the different things that he talked about. And so they would be familiar, at least, with the idea and the terms. Well, Daniel chapter 11 runs through a time period of history from the time they get back to Jerusalem, and it covers some things up until Jesus. There are a lot of events that go on that, unless you study your history, it's not going to make a whole lot of sense. But you've got the actual events that are going on in Jerusalem, around that area, and just a lot of details of history prophesied in Daniel. You know, and this is one of the things where if you go through the proof that the Bible is the Word of God booklet and you cover a couple prophecies out of Daniel, and you feel like you got a pretty good handle on it until you read the rest of the book of Daniel. And then you go, whoa, there's a whole lot more here than what I originally thought. So Daniel chapter 11 is covering a lot of that. Well, what we want to pick up is just one little segment of that. Let's start from verse 29. Daniel 11:29. Oh, no. It's time. See, you were right, Bob. We did have less than 3.5 days there. Okay, verse 29. It says, at the appointed time, he will return and come into the south, but this last time it will not turn out the way it did before. For the ships of Kittim will come against him. Therefore, he will be disheartened and will return and become enraged at the Holy Covenant and take action. So he will come back and show regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant. And forces from him will arise, desecrate the sanctuary fortress, and do away with the regular sacrifice. And they will set up the abomination of desolation. Okay, refers to a ruler that would come and says that he would actually come into Jerusalem. He says forces would arise from him. He would desecrate the sanctuary, that would be the temple, the sanctuary fortress, and do away with the regular sacrifice. Actually stop them from sacrificing to God. That was the regular temple sacrifices. And they will set up the abomination of desolation. Okay, here's your nutshell time frame on all this. This is around 2nd century B.C., so one something. Can't give you exact because I forgot to look it up again recently, and it doesn't stick. The exact year is not sticking in there. But Antiochus Epiphanes came into Jerusalem, brought his forces in there, was upset with the Jews, and actually did. I mean, he destroyed a lot of things and stopped their sacrifices. Entered into the temple, took his armies there, entered in, stopped the sacrifices, and according to history, actually sacrificed a pig on the altar. Okay. So this is what's being referred to as the abomination of desolation. Let's say 100, 150 years maybe before Christ, before Jesus is talking about it. So you did have, you know, a lot of times with these Old Testament prophecies, you do have a physical fulfillment in that their time frame, but then you have something else that they're really looking forward to. Daniel chapter 9, by the way, isn't talking about this one in particular. Daniel chapter 9 is talking about something totally different. But he's got to kind of, in a sense, give some clues, give a few hints as to what this is all going to be about. You know, the way that God put the Bible together is just sometimes absolutely amazing. You know, he'll put little things here and there just enough that if you're really looking, you can connect the dots, you know. And that's what you got going on here. He's back in chapter 9. He referred to some kind of an abomination, make desolate. You know, OK, what is that? You know, that's going to sound kind of strange. And then he gives them an event in their time frame and labels it the abomination of desolation and gives them an idea then of what it's going to be. In this case, it was actually the armies coming in to the temple area, stopping the sacrifices and actually sacrificing abominable things on the altar. Tom.
The terminology here has got me a little confused, though, because stopping something is different than doing away with it. Because the way it's read here is to do away with the regular sacrifice. So,
in chapter 9?
No, here in chapter 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it says, and forces from him will arise, desecrate the sanctuary forces, and do away with the regular sacrifice. Because I know there was another time, too, I think it was probably 50 or 60 B.C., where Roman forces came into Jerusalem and they invaded the temple sanctuary. And I think there was actually the blood of the priest got into the Holy of Holies. I forget the name of the Roman general that did that, but that was also considered to be an abomination. So,
right. Yeah, I'm not sure about that one, Tom. I won't say that my Roman history is that accurate. So, right. I remembered Antiochus Epiphanes. Got to give me credit for that one. But beyond that, doing away with it, I would have to stick with what Bob was saying back there for a time. You know, not necessarily totally it's done, never to happen again. Because you do have, even in the time of Christ, you do have them offering those sacrifices. So the things were restored. But he did do away with it for the time period that he was there. Now, who was it that then ended up instigating the whole Maccabean revolt? Was that, does anybody remember the time frame on that one? Was that the Maccabean? Okay, so a little before all this? 212, right. Okay, so you've got a lot of those kind of things. But the point that I'm making here is he actually gives them something to lock in on as far as abomination of desolation. And it is dealing with armies, temple, sacrifices, all that kind of stuff going on. Let's go back over to Matthew then. Because the prophecy in Daniel 9 was that sometime after that there would, after Jesus and after his sacrifice, there would be some kind of an abomination of desolation. That was the timing on Daniel 9. Bob.
According to my handy dandy little Bible, the Maccabeans were 166 BC to 37 BC. So that would put it right within your time frame of one.
Okay. Thank you. Now, hopefully your handy-dandy little Bible is right there. But you would hope. Okay. He was saying, what did you say, 167 to 30? 166 to 37 B.C. is what his little footnote. Somewhere in there. You had the Maccabeans for quite a while. I do know that. So, okay. So, trying to put this in some kind of clear order. Daniel 9 is the prophecy that there's going to be some kind of abomination of desolation that's going to happen after the Messiah, the Prince, has put an end to sacrifices, which would be with his own. So, sometime after Jesus' death, burial, resurrection, all that stuff, the beginning of the church, sometime after that, there's going to be an abomination of desolation. Daniel chapter 11, he talks about an abomination of desolation with Antiochus Epiphanes before all this, but giving the Jews at the time of Jesus a reference point and a little explanation of what that would be. And it dealt with armies in Jerusalem, in the temple area, and stopping sacrifices. Okay, now let's go to Matthew 24. Verse 15. It says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Okay, so now, keep in mind, this is still pre-Jesus' death. He's speaking primarily to Jews, and he's expecting them. Well, okay, Matthew at least puts the little let the reader understand in there. But Jesus didn't. And he was saying, you know, he's expecting them to have a clue of what he's talking about. When you see the abomination of desolation, which their minds are now switching back to Antiochus Epiphanes, all that kind of stuff, armies, Jerusalem, temple, sacrifices stopped, pigs on the altar, all those kind of things. They're thinking about that. He says, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place. Okay, they're still regarding the temple to be the holy place. So when you see this abomination of desolation standing in the holy place. Okay, let's see Mark, I believe it's going to be chapter 12. No, 13. Mark 13. Verse 14 says, but when you see the abomination of desolation standing where it should not be, let the reader understand. Again, the reader's supposed to understand this stuff. Good luck. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Okay. When you see the abomination of desolation standing where it should not be. Now, Matthew said standing in the holy place. Here he says standing where it should not be. Go over to Luke. Chapter 21. Luke 21. And it's still same discussions. If you're comparing Mark 13, Matthew 24, Luke 21, you've got the same things being discussed here. Same situation, which we'll get to in a second. Luke chapter 21, verse 20. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize that her desolation is at hand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let those who are in the midst of the city depart, and let not those who are in the country enter the city, and so on and so forth. Okay. This time, he doesn't say the abominations of desolation. He just says, recognize that her desolation is at hand. But he gives a little bit more when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. Okay, so putting all those things together, this abomination of desolation that was going to happen was going to be a time after Jesus did all of his stuff, after that, in which there would be armies surrounding Jerusalem, standing in the holy place, and his word to everybody is get out. Now, that, he says, recognizing that her desolation, which would be Jerusalem's desolation, is at hand. What fits that time frame? What fits that scenario? Would be 70 AD when my mind just went blank. Was it Vespasian? Surrounded Jerusalem with the army. Was it Vespasian or was
Titus was the general?
Right. Vespasian was the emperor at the time, right? I believe that's the way it works. You think it was the other way? One of those ways. We have the right names, at least. But in 70 AD, the Roman armies did come. See, you know, I could really just kind of go really general and play, pretend like I really know this stuff. But it's one of those things. Roman history, I have read it. I actually have studied it some. But I can't say that I use it often enough for the dates to stick in my head. Some guys, I think Mr. Wilson just has one of those minds. He just and kind of grasps those things and never lets go of them. Mine lets go of them. The little Pac-Man guy, yeah. And he never lets go of them. Of course, Rain, you just show your age there when you actually know who Pac-Man is. So did I in the arcade. But anyway, those dates, I have to keep going back. There are certain things like that. And I don't know if you might be the same way. Maybe you've got those mine like the steel trap. I have mine like a steel trap that's rusted a little bit at times. But that you can keep on, hold on to those dates. I've got to keep reviewing them. And I did not review them this morning, so that's why you are getting this. I'm not sure about dates. Still, the picture is still there, though, that in 70 AD, the Roman armies came, circled Jerusalem, and eventually ended up destroying it, standing in the holy place, and they actually totally destroyed the place. Now, given that, let's go back to Matthew 24 and see what are the things that are leading up to him saying this. Matthew 24. Okay, at the beginning, they're at the temple. They're looking at the buildings. And his disciples are kind of pointing out how beautiful they are. Herod had really worked, had really revamped everything, had made it look nice, made it look beautiful. Everything's wonderful. And so they're kind of proud of this. They're, you know, good Jewish boys and all, men. They're proud of how nice the temple does look. And so they're pointing it out to Jesus. And verse 2, he answered and said, "Do you see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another, which will not be torn down." Okay, so Jesus is talking about the destruction of the temple. They're talking about how beautiful the temple is. Jesus says it's going to be destroyed. It's going to be torn down. Not one stone will be left on another. In verse 3 then, it says, as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" Okay, now, this is where people get thrown a little bit for a loop because they go, oh, the sign of his coming and the end of the age. Okay, keep in mind, the disciples are asking a different question than what we would be asking today. If we're asking the question, what will be the sign of your coming? What will be the sign of the end of the age? We're asking a different question than what the disciples were asking. We get that finger in Matthew 24. Flip back over to Mark 13. Mark 13. Verse 2, Jesus said to him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone shall be left upon another, which will not be torn down." And he's sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple. Peter and James and John and Andrew were questioning him privately. "Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign when all these things are going to be fulfilled?" Notice this isn't the question of his kingdom and the end of the age and all that kind of stuff. It's when are these things going to be fulfilled? Well, the only thing that he's told them about to this point is the destruction of the temple. When is that going to happen? What are going to be the signs of that happening? When will these things be, the destruction of the temple and all those buildings being torn down? And what will be the sign when all these things are going to be fulfilled? So they want to know time and they want to know signs. very good Jewish things to look for. Jews were taught to look for signs. And so they're asking, what are going to be the signs? So that we know what when this is going to happen. Now, and by the way, if you look over in Luke's account, it has the same basic setup as Mark. So in Matthew, what are they really asking? Well, from their perspective, tell us when these things will be and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age. They think that the destruction of the temple is when he's coming to set his stuff up. That's what they're looking at. That's their expectation. Oh, well, this must be how it's going to happen because he's telling us that this is all going to be torn down. He must be coming. He's going to build a nicer one. He's going to come back and build one maybe like Solomon had. Because even Herod's didn't compare with Solomon's. He's going to go even nicer on us. All right, great. When's this going to be? That's what they're asking. Now, given that then, look at Jesus' answer, verse 4. Jesus answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. And this is the next verse is the verse that everyone used to tell me in Ghana when I would ask them, can you prove that the Bible is the Word of God? And they say, yes. And they talk about prophecies. Oh, yeah, prophecies. All right. What prophecies do you know that prove that the Bible is the Word of God? Matthew 24:6 was the prophecy. And you will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. In various places there will be famines and earthquakes, but these are merely the beginning of birth pangs. You know, even in Africa, they look at all the earthquakes, and you still get the news in Africa. You get the earthquakes, you get the wars and rumors of wars, and they go, oh, see, the Bible is the Word of God. This is happening today. Or as some would say, this is just like reading yesterday's newspaper. Or today's newspaper, for that matter. Okay? That's not what Jesus is talking about. They're asking, when is the temple going to be destroyed? And so Jesus' answer is, you're going to hear all these things. There are going to be wars and rumors of wars. Which, by the way, wars and rumors of wars, those have been going on since like time began. You know, so ever since Cain killed Abel, there have been wars and rumors of wars. You know, so this is like trying to use this and prove that the Bible is the Word of God is like trying to prove that horoscopes are accurate. You know, it's same basic thing. You could use it and apply it to just about any situation. Okay, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. In various places, there will be famines and earthquakes. All those things are going to keep going on. You know, but all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs. Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations on account of my name. And at that time, many will fall away and will deliver up one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. And because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. That was quoted to me this week. But the one who endures to the end shall be saved, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world for a witness to all the nations, and then the end shall come. Therefore, okay, because of all this, then the end shall come. What's the end that he's talking about there? It's still the end of the temple. It's still the end of, you know, what he's answering their question. Now, he's going to give them a little bit more than they ask for, but he is answering their question. Therefore, because of all that stuff, he says, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to get the things out that are in his house. And let him who is in the field not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are with child, to those who nurse babes in those days. But pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. That would be bad for the Jews. For then there will be a great tribulation such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall be. And unless those days have been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days shall be cut short. Okay. Jesus is just saying, listen. Daniel spoke about an abomination of desolation. That things would be made desolate. There is a time that will come when that's going to happen, when the temple would be torn down, that one stone would not be left on another. He says that time will happen. But he says, you know, and you're going to have lots of things that go on between there. So this is, he's letting them know, first of all, this isn't going to happen tomorrow. This isn't going to happen next week. You know, because keep in mind, this is Jesus is saying this during the last week of his life on earth. He's getting ready to die. What do you think that's going to do to the disciples and their focus? And so he's trying to give them a longer range picture. Hey, not right here, not right now. Down the road, something's going to happen. But he says, when you see the abomination of desolation, when you see the armies surrounding Jerusalem, as he put it in Luke, when you see those armies surrounding Jerusalem, then get out. That's the simple terms. It's don't bother to pack a bag. Don't think that this is just going to be a little visit from the soldiers kind of thing. Get out and be gone, because it's going to get bad and it's going to get ugly. Okay, now, if you want to make the comparisons to today, you're welcome to do that. But that's not specifically what he was talking about. Are there lessons that can be learned? Sure. But that's not specifically what this is about. This is about the destruction of Jerusalem. That's what he was setting them up for. That's what he was preparing them for. Is, hey, when this is happening, you know, pay attention to all this, then you need to get out. Anybody have any comments here? Okay. You're going to save yours? That's okay. I try. Is it something that I can unconfuse you at this time?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay. We have about 7 minutes to get you unconfused. Here we go.
Applying this totally to 70 AD, then when you read 22, and unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days shall be cut short. The church existed throughout all of Asia Minor by 70 AD. Therefore, by cutting short whatever happened in Jerusalem would not have saved the church nor destroyed the church. So how do you reconcile that fact with this applies only to 70 AD?
Okay, that's a good question. Let me get back up here so I can summarize it. Okay. We were reading, we got down to the whole Great Tribulation. Sorry. Let's start it from 15, go down through 22, and go from there. Okay? And then I'll tell you what he was asking about that. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to get the things out that are in his house. Let him who is in the field not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are with child, and to those who nurse babes in those days. But pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be a great tribulation such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall be. And unless those days have been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days shall be cut short. Here's his question. And it's coming out of verse 22. He's saying, if this is all about AD 70 and the destruction of Jerusalem, then let me get this. If it's all about that, then in verse 22, when it says, no life would have been saved for the sake of the elect, it was cut short. His question was, by that point in time, the church had already spread throughout Asia Minor. It was already over in Rome, and it was throughout various parts of the Roman Empire by that point in time. So it pretty much had gone everywhere. In fact, according to the book of Romans, it had gone through all the world, all creation. So it actually had gone everywhere by AD 70, yeah. Yeah, actually even before. It was moving fast. Things move fast. So it had gone throughout everywhere. And so Bob's question is, why would it say no life would have been saved, but for the sake of the elect, if everything had already spread out and if this was just the destruction of Jerusalem? Okay? Answer. And that is, you know, there are some things in this passage that are a little challenging. So I'll throw this into the challenging category, but I'll give it my my best on you. Okay? The things prior to that, I think you would be hard-pressed to get them to apply to anything else. The Judea, flee to the mountains. Maybe they're supposed to flee to Montana. Maybe that was it. Flee to Montana. I think he's talking about the elect when he's getting to the elect part. But anyway, let me get back to the Judea, flee to the mountains. Okay, that's, you're talking local there. The one, and then all that stuff, housetop, field, those who are with child, those who nurse babes, all that kind of stuff. Pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. Okay, again, Sabbath, you're dealing specifically with the Jewish people. For then there will be a great tribulation such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. Okay. So everything up to this point in his description has been specific to Jerusalem and Judea, that area. When he says, unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. Okay, I think he's speaking of the Jews. I think he's still keeping that specific to that area, that the Romans would have wiped out everyone there. But for the sake of the elect, that would be the Christians who were there, those days shall be cut short. Okay, that would be my take on that one, Bob. For there will be a great tribulation, such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. Saddam did worse than all that. It's a good question. Good thought. Let's get. Well, keep in mind too, you know, and this is, it's good for us to go through this because, number one, most people, if you get to verse 21 where it talks about great tribulation, are thinking that we're heading into that now. Most people, that's what they're thinking. Okay? And particularly given the time, given this point in time and the things that are going on, you're going to have lots of opportunities for discussions. Like I said, three times in this past week it's come up. And I don't deal with I do deal with a good chunk of people, but some of you might even run into more people than I do. So you're going to come face to face with that idea. Then also on top of that, though, you've got to be able to sit down and run through it and make it make sense to people. Because if they're thinking, oh, the Great Tribulation, we're getting ready for the Great Tribulation, we're getting ready for the rapture, they're gonna be in for a big surprise. And tough times are coming, and I don't think they're going to get raptured out of it. If they're getting raptured out of it, it's going to be at the end of a gun. In a sense, the fields are white for harvest. This is an open door for opportunity, so let's make sure that we have a grasp of it. So Bob, when Bob's coming up with the whole Great Tribulation thing, it's a legitimate thing that you're going to have to be able to answer. Tom?
Well, I was just going to comment on the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. That actually was a major, major massacre. It happened basically, you know, over a short period of time. The estimates of the dead were 1.5 million to maybe as high as 3 million people. And when the Roman army went in, they just wiped out everybody. You know, I know there's been some people in the past that have tried to make a correlation to that about how much worse the Holocaust is that took place, you know, in Europe in the 1940s. But nobody's ever really been able to put a figure on what that was, and that took over a longer period of time, too. So this may well have been the worst that ever happened or ever will happen with 70 AD.
Okay. Yeah, and let me throw something in. This will be fun. Go to Isaiah 52, please. And here's the reason I'll bring this in. Just side note, Isaiah 53. Who's it about? Jesus. You know, this Isaiah 53 is a place where you can even sit down with a Muslim and read it, and they'll still go, yeah, that's about Jesus. Okay? Isaiah 52 is the getting running into that. Start from verse 13. Behold, my servant will prosper. He will be high and lifted up and greatly exalted. Just as many were astonished at you, my people, so his appearance was marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. Thus he will sprinkle many nations. Kings will shut their mouths on account of him, for what had not been told them, they will see. They will see, and what they had not heard, they will understand. Who's that about? Jesus. Okay, still pretty clear. Verse 14. Just as many were astonished at you, my people, so his appearance was marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. I've had actually somebody ask me the question, was his appearance really marred that much? I mean, there are some people who've had some really major accidents, major disfigurations, all kinds of stuff that sound like it was worse than Jesus's. You know, and in this case, we would come back and say, well, it says his form was, or his appearance was marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. And we can see from the passage it's talking about Jesus. So we just kind of got to go, yes, maybe I don't fully understand, you know, maybe my standard of measurement of what is marred more than any other man. You know, but God says his form, his appearance was marred more than any other man. Now, how does that apply? I think the same thing in Matthew 24, looking at the bulk of what's going on, the picture is Jerusalem and Judea. When you get to the thing about tribulation and, you know, worse than any other time, we might want to try to debate that and say, well, it seems like this one was worse or that one was worse, but I think we're going to have to come back to God says that this was worse. And all the other things in that section do talk specifically about the destruction of Jerusalem. And so I think you're going to come back to that same thing. I think you have to go to, in the context, what's it all about? And some things like that, you kind of got to look at it and go, God says it was worse. I guess it was worse. You know, maybe history doesn't give us as accurate of a picture as it really was, even. You know, if you consider that history is written by the victors, maybe they toned it down a little bit to make themselves look a little better. Who knows? Anyway, but this stuff, it's important in the sense of, you know, making sure that you are ready to be able to talk with people. You know, this is an open door. This is, you know, people are willing to talk about the economic crisis. People are willing to talk about how much they hate the bailout or whatever. And they're willing to talk about how this, you know, how this applies. You'll find people that are even willing to go, this must be the end of, you know, this is the end. You know, Jesus is going to be coming soon. You know, and the rapture is getting ready to happen. People are going to be willing to go there. There's your opening. There's an opportunity to talk. Not that you're going to slam it back in their face, because you don't really want to argue about whether or not the rapture is going to happen or whether or not, you know, the tribulation, that we're getting ready for the great tribulation. What you really want to be ready for is, so are you spiritually ready for that? See, the door is open. And we need to be ready to take advantage of it. But make sure that you have a handle on things so that you don't get wandering down the rapture line and end up getting sidetracked and not being able to stay on the real issues of spiritually, are you ready for what's coming?